haven't done this where we've been on opposite sides of the world in a while.
No, it's very exciting to not have to stare at you.
Awkward eye contact situations.
When we were doing it in live in person, you kept kind of like winking at me like there's some sort of inside joke that I didn't get.
No, I just have a twitchy eye.
Sorry. Hello and welcome to episode 39 of the Two Hosers Photo Show. I am Alan, and as always, back to normal, sitting back here in Tübingen, Germany, and with me is, I didn't add the is part, is.
Yeah, I was waiting for the grand introduction. Adam, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So you stayed in Vancouver?
Yes, I stayed. You left.
I left. Well, the thing, yeah, for now. Back in Germany for now. On my way out the door to the airport, I got a bunch of jobs came in. So basically came here to pick up my wife and daughter and come on back to Vancouver.
Sweet.
So yeah, we're going to spend the autumn, the fall.
Yeah.
Herbst. What do you call it? What's in French? What do you call autumn?
I don't know. I don't speak French.
I know the other three. That's the thing. I was thinking about it. I know the other three. I don't know autumn.
We can look it up, or maybe our French listener.
Yeah, Pierre. how do you say? Sorry, Jean-Pierre. How do you say fall? Anyways, we're spending that in Vancouver. So
exciting, and so that means probably more live podcasts.
It means more live podcasts. So you. Again, with the eye contact.
And the awkward staring scenarios.
We're going to work on that. Yeah. How is the weather? Are you guys getting the Indian summer or no?
We had a fantastic September.
Yeah.
And so far, October has been not so great. And the rain looks like it's going to be here in Vancouver for the better part of the week. Oh. So it's a sudden change. We had almost no rain in September, but now we are getting it.
Wow. Went hiking yesterday with some friends. Honestly, I'm not even joking. 29 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's Celsius. Pretty nice.
I don't know what that means in Fahrenheit.
It means hot.
Yeah, it was hot. It was like summer hot, October the 3rd. So.
Yeah. Is that good? I don't know.
It worked out for us because we went out into the place called the Schwäbische Alb, like the little rolling hills, and went for a hike.
So you hike with your baby?
Yeah, we called it a hike. I think the Germans like to call it a hike. It wasn't really a hike. It was a walk. A walk on a path in the woods.
Okay, I was envisioning you with some gigantic backpacking structure where your kid was perched on top of like 18 sleeping bags and a metal rack of some sort.
No. Very un-German, man.
Oh, okay.
I did have her in the front carry thing. That you strap on.
Yeah, yeah.
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 So I did that for a while. So we went out there and roasted some sausage over the open fire. That's what we did.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. We should call it the Two Hosers Boring Stuff Show.
Or the Two Hosers Backpacking Campout Show.
Fine. What did you shoot? How about we start with what did I shoot this week?
Okay, how about that? Because we care more about that.
Right. More baby pics, of course. That's all.
Yeah.
Not enough candid stuff, I notice. I've been noticing I have a lot of posed stuff. Which, I mean, I suppose that's all she does is pose.
Trained well.
But I meant sort of with everybody, just sort of, casual stuff. So I'm going to try to get more candid photos.
Okay.
So I'm looking at, look back at your baby pictures. How many photo shoots did you go on when you were a kid?
I have about 11 pictures that exist of me from the time I was born to the time that I was about 18. So,
and nine of them were for like every year with Santa.
Yeah, or class photos more likely. Those are the pictures I got every year. Hey, here's your class photo. So this is 11. Now you're 12. So that's it.
My class photo for 8 years in a row, I'm not even joking. For some reason, like I guess they had the same photographer, and his lighting setup would always create a shadow on my nose, so that when like, but not on my across my whole nose, it would create a shadow under my left nostril, so it looked as if I had a raisin stuck in my nose.
Sweet.
8 years in a row.
Were you the only one with the raisin face?
I have no clue. Other kids didn't talk to me, so I couldn't really compare pictures. Yeah.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. It was, oh, hey, here comes raisin face. Everybody duck. That's what happened.
So sweet.
So, yeah, that's what I did. Oh, then I shot some stuff with the I made a fake window and put it in front of the flash.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I sent you the pictures. I know you didn't look.
I looked at some of the stuff you sent me, but I didn't look at those. That's in a separate window folder, I'm guessing.
That's gonna be way deep in our off-camera flash stuff.
Cool. I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, okay. So you're gonna end up doing that. So how about you? What did you shoot?
I shot not a lot. I had a major breakdown with my 50mm lens, so kind of sounded like having the same problem that you were having with your old kit lens, where the camera was saying that there was an issue with the lens contacts. There was a communication issue between the lens and the camera, and so it said clean the contacts, which of course I did, to no avail.
How many times did you clean the contacts?
I just cleaned it once, and because again it rang bells, alarm bells started going off from the story you had said. So mm-hmm. I cleaned the contacts, read on the internet how to clean the contacts, did all that, didn't change it. Just decided I would take it into a camera store just to see what if they had experienced this issue. And the guy said, oh, we'll clean the contacts again. So he cleaned it again. Of course, it didn't work. And then we thought, well, maybe it's the camera body. So we stuck the exact same lens on. The guy at the store pulled out the same lens, and we put it on the camera. Of course, no problem. Stuck mine back on. Problem again. So we came to the conclusion that it was likely the lens. And my kit lens worked fine, so I was pretty certain it wasn't to do with the mm-hmm. camera, because everything else we'd stuck on there was fine. So sent it back to Canon. So
you isolated the problem.
Yes, isolated the problem.
That's key.
Yeah.
Just in life, just in regular everyday life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do have to say that I have a few customer service issues with Canon. I don't know if I should burn any bridges on our podcast. But,
well, they do have your $80 lens in their possession, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'd be very scared as to what's going to happen.
Tell me the issues. That's okay. We fire away. We've praised Canon, you know, before, so they can hear the negative.
Yeah. So everybody out there who has one of these 50mm lenses probably realizes by now this isn't the most expensive piece of photography equipment. So this cost me, I think I spent $100. It ranges, I guess, between $100 and $130, depending on where you buy it and whether it's on sale. But so it's a $100 lens, which cost me $20 to ship back to Canon. Okay, so
because Canon in Canada, Canon, actually, I think they have two repair centers. One for video, I think, is in Calgary. I've dealt with them before.
Yeah,
the other one's in Toronto.
Yeah, it was in Mississauga, so which is close to Toronto. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to ship it from Vancouver to Toronto, which cost me $20, and we're talking about a $100 lens. So I under warranty and everything, because I'd only had it for 10 months, and it's got a 1 year warranty. So I shipped it back there, and then the other day I called Canon just to see, you know, had they got the lens. Of course, now with the technology, you can see online exactly when your package gets delivered and who even signs for it. So I knew it hadn't gotten there, hadn't heard anything for a week, and of course on their website, you know, they say if you leave your email address, phone number, blah, 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 they'll contact you kind of with an update on your order. Of course, this never happens. So then I call, and hunting down the number of who to talk to at their service center is really, really easy online too. So I finally tracked it down through getting sort of put through the ringer on the phone, passed on three different numbers. So I finally get to the place that can help me. And then the guy tells me on the phone that they're waiting for a part on this $100 lens, and then they're going to repair it. And I thought, wait a second here. Just again, maybe they're just giving me a line, but does that make sense to you that somebody's going to fix a lens that only cost retail $100? So figure out what their production cost mm-hmm. must be. And they're going to actually have a trained professional order a part and then put this thing back together?
That doesn't make much sense to me.
No, it didn't make any sense to me. So we'll see. Or maybe it was just a line that you give everybody on the phone thinking, hey, yeah, we have no idea what's going on, but it's in the process. It's going to get repaired. But he gave me a repair number, and I said, really? They're actually repairing this thing? And he said, yeah, it's waiting on a part, and then they'll fix it, and it should be back to you in about another week. So we'll see if that happens or not. But I'm a little less than thrilled that they're actually going to fix that. Instead of just sending you a new one, right?
I think they would just give you a brand new one.
Yeah, I would think. Again, if it was a $1,200 lens, I get it. But just the $100 lens, I expected just that they'd get this thing, stick a new one in a box, and send it back to me. That would be, I would think, the best customer service plan, but not the way they're going about it.
Yes. For me, the issue is always getting somebody on the phone. I like to talk to, when in these situations, I like to talk to somebody and ask questions, because my questions aren't always answered on the website.
Yeah.
And now with this day and age, with the whole internet thing, they employ one person to answer all the phones. Yeah. And like you said, good luck finding that number.
Yeah.
It's always buried in some secret menu at the back of their webpage, and they just don't want you to call.
Yeah, exactly.
And even in Germany, it goes way past that. Is that most of those kind of phone numbers that you would phone for customer service are actually toll numbers. Like, for instance, we just booked our flights and with the airline here, and you want to phone and talk to them about your flight, 14 cents a minute.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is. That's just wrong.
Yeah. So I did not do that. I phoned their North American number from my Skype.
Yeah.
For free.
Just smart thinking on your part.
That's how I do it.
Savvy.
So how many more days till you get the lens back, and
who
do
knows?
You miss it?
I miss it a lot, but it is forcing me to rediscover the kit lens. And again, I've all my shots in the last couple of weeks have been with the kit lens, but I don't know if we want to touch on this or not, but I did get my off-camera stuff, so that's kept me plenty busy.
That's exactly what we're gonna tease about. We're gonna talk about what happened there. You got some equipment, man.
Yes, I did. I got the Cactus triggers, so the very cheap end of the spectrum. I figure I've got the budget camera, I've got the budget lens. Why not have the budget flash triggers? And then I can educate people on whether or not this budget stuff is good or not. But so I got the Cactus triggers. So I have two sets of them. So that I could do my flash that I already had. And then I went out and bought another used flash. I don't know if it's the same one that you've got, but the Nikon SB28.
I have two of them.
Yeah. So I bought one of those used for $100. And so now I've got two sets of triggers. And so I could even add one more flash with the number of triggers that I've got.
Oh, really?
And yeah, because I mean, basically, I'm only using three. I've got a transmitter. They double as the same. You just set it to either transmitter or receiver.
Okay.
And so now I've got a transmitter, and then I've got three potentially receivers, and I'm using two of them now.
And so for our listeners in the United States, $100 for a used SB28 is pretty cheap in Canada.
Yeah. So and
I know the price down in the States is quite a bit cheaper. You can probably find them for, I don't know, were they about $60 now, I bet. And they used to be cheaper in Canada as well. And then Strobist got very popular. And all of a sudden, the price on these used flashes went through the roof.
Yeah.
So at one point, when I was looking, the price, I couldn't even find one, but the prices, they were going for around $130 or $150. So $100, good deal.
Yeah, I was happy. I was happy to get that. And it didn't seem like there's many places that offered used flashes, and so your selection was very limited, or you're going Craigslist. And then to me, I like to have the camera place. If I have an issue, I can go back and talk to them, and I wanted that. So
yeah, you're looking at probably cost you an extra $20 at the most to buy it from those guys.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Absolutely worth the peace of mind, and I happen to know who you bought it from. You can go ahead and say it if you like, because they're great guys.
Carisdale Cameras.
Carisdale Cameras. That's where whenever I get a chance to buy something from a brick and mortar store when I'm in town, that's the first place I go.
And I did buy one of the
not a flash, sponsor, not a sponsor. Sorry.
I did buy one of the flash trigger sets from Carisdale as well. And then when I bought direct from the site, which is out of Hong Kong, called Gadget Infinity, who sells the Cactus transmitters. So the downside of buying it from the Hong Kong site was that it took 2 weeks to get here, which isn't that bad, but the U.S. Parcel Service, who they did the shipping through, basically their tracking system was so fantastic that all I saw for a week and 9 days or something was that it was in Hong Kong. And then, oh, magically it appeared the next day in Point Roberts, Washington. And so it went from Hong Kong, with never being scanned apparently anywhere else, to arrival at destination. So that was, I was thrilling when every day I'd look for the update on where this thing was, and it was still Hong Kong sorting facility. Wow. So, good job on the U.S. Parcel Service. So,
good customer service week for you.
Yeah, so I had basically given up that I was never receiving this item, and I was going to buy another set anyways. But then, you know, it did show up eventually, and so then I ended up going out and buying another set. So I'm all equipped.
Good to hear.
Yeah. So
that's it. Well, we're going to talk in way more depth about that in a later show.
Yeah.
We hinted last week at off-camera flash, and we're going to get into that. There's one topic I want to get to before the weather changes. So we're going to talk about that. But go ahead.
Can I just say one more thing?
No.
The triggers that I did get are the newest generation of the Cactus triggers. So they're the V5s. A lot of places still selling the V4s, and from all the reviews that I read online about this, V5 is a significant upgrade from the V4s. Never used the V4s, only these V5s, but my first impression, and again, this is having nothing to compare it to, is they are fantastic, and I've yet to experience any misfiring, and same with all the people that wrote the reviews. Nobody's had any misfiring issues, so far so good. Yeah, so far so good.
I look forward to hearing more about your experience, and I also look forward to getting my hands on them.
Yeah.
And giving them a little run. We'll shoot some stuff when I'm back. We'll go out and shoot some running around Strobus stuff, I think.
Sounds good.
So there's that. Okay, well, let's get right into the photo challenge.
Yes.
Last week's challenge, you challenged you and myself to shoot a group shot.
Yes.
So let's have a look at that. Who wants to go first?
Let's start with you.
Okay, because I don't have them up yet.
Okay, well, I have them up. So let's start with your first one. So the one, I guess, this is at a restaurant, I'm guessing?
This is at a restaurant. And my wife's school friends are some sort of a school. It wasn't like a school. I guess it was a school reunion, but not really.
Yeah.
So I tagged along to say hello. I introduced myself and then left so they could enjoy their, hey, remember when so-and-so did whatever in gym class? Isn't that what happens at reunions?
I don't know. I've never been to a reunion, but I imagine it's something like that.
And mine was earlier this year, but I was not in Vancouver for it, so I missed it and never been to one myself.
Remember when we gave Alan that wedgie and then he couldn't walk for a week?
Yes. Remember when good old Raisin Face? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good times.
All right, so why don't you tell us about your picture?
Well, it's just a group shot. I admit this isn't my best photo I've ever taken. I'm going to go ahead and just huck it out there.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan, to be honest.
You look at this, you don't go, man, this guy should start a podcast. This clearly is a game here.
Right.
However, when coupled with the other photo, it does illustrate a point, one tip on making a group shot. Let's just talk about what. First of all, I didn't get everybody corralled together. Like, normally I would have everybody crowd around the one table.
Right.
And they get everybody in close. But I'll be honest with you, I really phoned it in. I had stuff to do. I ended up going home and...
I don't want to hear it. Just stick on task.
You
don't want
to hear about my whole sob story about work?
No, I don't.
I was a busy guy. What am I supposed to do?
Well,
just drop everything for you?
Yep.
You make some crazy challenge with a group photo and I got to just disrupt my life?
Well, you had the opportunity. They were all here. You just had to, do it. You just had to do something creative with it. Yeah. So that's where you dropped the ball. You obviously took the time to take this picture.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, looking at the other picture, you'll see I took a, a typical group photo.
Right.
And that's just sort of your straight-on shot where I also shooting this with my new 17-40 lens as well. That's why it looks a little bit goofy on the edges.
Oh, I thought this must have been on your iPod.
No. No.
No. Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah. If we could just tone it down a little bit, I think we'd all appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so why is this picture bad?
Well, the first one is a pretty standard picture. It's like typically you take a group photo, you just snap away like this. But I tend to, when I want to actually make a better photo, a better group shot, I tend to shoot from a higher angle.
Right.
So in the other one, I stood up on a chair and shot down. And that kind of flattens everybody's face out. It makes it easier for everybody to see the camera.
Yeah.
And for the camera to see their face.
Yeah.
So I actually have a very nice group shot I took at a wedding, but that was a couple of months ago, and I didn't want to cheat. And so I, in a situation like that, when I'm taking a group shot of like the entire wedding, like, you know, whatever it is, 100 people or so, I'll usually find a balcony somewhere and go stand on the balcony and shoot down. And that way you can get everybody in the shot. Everybody has their whole face being seen by the camera. And everybody's face is relatively the same distance from the camera and thus approximately the same size.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas here, you can see it's really pronounced. The guy in the front left, besides being a little distorted because of the lens distortion, his head is quite large compared to the girl in the back.
Yeah.
Because of perspective. Now, in the...
I call her Raisin Head.
Raisin Head. And so in the other one, now, when I'm standing up and shooting down, you can see it's not exactly perfect, but it is a little more even.
Yeah.
If I had everybody crowd in closer, it would have been a lot better. Everyone would have been a lot more in proportion. And the other thing, too, is I bounce the flash off the ceiling, and by standing up and shooting down, I'm actually able to bounce the flash in a more even way so that it kind of spreads out across everybody.
Yeah.
Whereas if you notice in the first one, or in the second one, the people in the back are a little darker than the people in the front.
Yeah.
That's just because the flash can't cover that much area.
Right.
So that's it.
Okay.
Want to move away from the horrible, horrible photos and go into your masterpiece?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
So I tagged along for my wife's craft night on Friday night and you know, sort of offered to take a picture for them, so something maybe that they could have, but really it was so I could get a group shot for
that's why you went, right?
What's that?
That's what the whole reason you tagged along to your wife's craft night is so you could take pictures.
Right. Yes.
Okay. I was a little bit nervous.
I only was there for the picture taking parts. I was there for approximately a half an hour.
Because you bought the new off camera flash.
Right. And I wanted
subjects.
Yeah, I needed subjects. I wanted to give it a little test drive.
Have you ever been to a craft night before?
No, I haven't.
And you've never met these women then?
No, I've met these women. These are friends of my wife.
Okay.
But just I've never been to craft night to meet them.
Okay.
Let's make that clear.
I'm glad we got that out of the way. I had some concerns.
Okay. So,
anytime you hear the husband say, "I tagged along with my wife to her craft night,"
right?
Alarm bells.
Okay, so I assure you, I didn't stay beyond the picture taking portion.
Okay.
So I went with the intention of taking sort of a picture of them, sort of crafting in the living room area, which was kind of set up for crafting. But when I arrived, there was kind of some nice light. It was about, I don't know, probably 6:45. So there was some nice sunset light coming in, which you can see behind them. So I decided to take them outside and set up the off-camera flash and just take a picture that way. So they got a little creative, and we did the shot that you see that has them sort of in a pyramid structure. And so basically the camera is, I'm shooting them with a flash on a stand with an umbrella off to the left of the camera. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, and that's it. And this is with the kit lens, by the way. So I basically I exposed for the background first, and then I set the umbrella and the flash up, and then I tried to light them evenly so that I still got the nice colors in the sky in the background.
Nice. Let's talk a little bit about composition. That's the part that I think is the big takeaway here.
Okay.
Because we'll compare it to your other photo. Photo number two, we have the same group in sort of a different pose.
Yep.
Also having fun.
Yep.
Which is, that's kind of key.
That's the piggyback one that you're talking about, right?
The piggyback one, yep.
Yeah.
Now, okay, they're piggybacking. I was hoping you were going to include one that with a more conventional pose, where everyone's just standing around to compare it, but this is a good shot as well. So,
well, I do have, and again, I don't know that it illustrates the point, but did you see that I had put a third one in at the craft table, which is a much more conventional? So
yes.
I don't know if that illustrates the point you're going to make, but
no, I'm going to need you to go back to Craft Night next week and take some
another
more.
One outside. That's a more conventional pose.
Yeah, just go to the next few Craft Nights.
See, what I was trying to do outside was not phone it in. I was trying to be creative and make something happen. So this is why my poses are less conventional.
Right, right. Well, with your dance card not that full, and you can, that you can attend your wife's Craft Night.
Hey. Listen here. This is, I attended this with both children in tow. And so they're standing beside me dancing around so that I can get these shots off. So I made the extra commitment. I took a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old on this camera shoot with me.
All right.
That's dedication.
Yeah, that you're a true hero.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Can we move on now?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, we could talk about you some more. How awesome you are.
No, I think that's clear.
Yeah, it is clear. You made it clear with these photos. They are very good. They are very good photos. I chose the other one over this one just because it kind of goes to another tip, a group shot tip that I wrote down, is that you want to create levels.
Right.
Now you did this with the piggybacking and everybody had fun, but you did it even more extreme in the other one, where that's a great way to kind of get away from your conventional group shots, is to create different levels of interest. How does that sound? Like, you know, have people, some people sitting, some people standing, and that sort of thing. You know, you have people lay across the bottom, whatever it is, whatever kind of way you can create sort of something interesting in terms of levels is a great way to deconventionalize your photos.
Yeah.
So oftentimes I look for that if I'm going to take a group shot of, like, I don't know, 10 or 12 people or more, I'll look for some steps. Is always a good way to do it.
Yeah.
And, so there's that. And the other thing, it's, I even made a note of this before I even saw your pictures, is when you have taking a group shot, you want to, it's really important to establish a good relationship with your subjects. Because, you know, not everybody loves taking the group shots. It can get pretty tedious. And so a good tip is to bring your kids along and have them dance for the people.
Which is what I did in this situation.
Yeah, but that really is a great thing, is that you kept it, obviously kept it fun, rather than just bossing people around like I did and phoning it in. You kept it fun, and it really shows in the all their faces.
So another challenge win for me?
Another yet again.
For those of you keeping score at home, it's a lot for me and a few for you.
Yeah, for those of you keeping score at home, get a better hobby than keeping score. Do something else. Go outside, man. Yeah,
good point. That's good.
The last tip for the group shots. You know, so far they've been elevate yourself and shoot down to even everybody's faces out. Create different levels is a great way to do it. Establish a good relationship with your subjects. And point number four is, this is what I always tell. This happens with a big group. With five women, it's not an issue. But when you have a big group of like 100 people, there's no way you're going to look at each individual and like take a picture and then scan that photo quickly to see if everybody's looking at the camera. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Generally, you don't have that kind of time. So what I tell everybody is actually something I learned on a movie set a long time ago. The guys, you know, whenever you're working on a movie set, you obviously want to stay out of the shot. That's a good tip. If you're not an actor,
Yeah.
Don't be on camera. And so they always joke and they tell you, if you can see the camera can see you. So that's how you stay out of the camera. But the opposite is true, and I always yell this out to the group, whether it's in English or in German. If you can't see the camera can't see you. And that's how everyone makes sure that they can stare right in the lens.
That's wise.
Well, wise might be overselling it, but it works.
Okay.
So there you go. That's group shots.
All right.
Also, good colors in your pictures, by the way.
Thank you. Now, this is just a little question I have for you. When I look at the one picture where they're in the piggybacks, the thing that stands out to me, again, critiquing my own photo, is that their faces are all very evenly lit, right? Uh-huh. And the flash position is exactly the same on the two pictures. But when I created the more extreme levels, you can see the people on the bottom row, you know, they've all kind of got shadows on one side of their face. Mm-hmm. And again, they might have moved up a foot or two, but again, not a whole lot. And so I'm just wondering, like, from the standpoint of, you know, like, critical eye, is that an issue? Like, because the top two people in the levels, they're very evenly lit, but the bottom three have got the shadow. So would that be an issue?
I'm going to guess, hard for me to figure out where you're pointing the flash. Like, how high was the flash, and where were you pointing it?
It was angled down kind of at about mm-hmm. maybe a 30, 40 degree, and it's the level of the higher. Oh, it's actually even probably a little higher than the people mm-hmm. At the top. So it must just be the angle that it's catching them is more direct to them than the people on the bottom.
It looks like quite the opposite to me. It looks like the center of the flash is hitting the bottom row and creating the shadows that you see, and you can see that on the pavement, and that's kind of why the pavement's lit up and then it falls off.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
And so my guess is that the light hitting the upper row girls is probably coming more from the side of the umbrella and thus a little softer.
Right. Okay.
That's my guess.
And just looking at the lines on the pavement, because I got the two pictures side by side, it looks like they must have moved up in the second picture, like, or in the picture where they're in the pyramid.
Possibly.
Because yeah. I think if I had it back further, if the flash was back further,
you're skipping ahead though. We don't want to confuse people with the off camera stuff yet.
Sorry.
But
doesn't that just make sense? Even if the flash is on camera, if I just move back, wouldn't I have a better chance of more evenly lighting them?
Yep. On camera?
Yeah. Wouldn't it still be a more even light if I backed up or no?
That's a tough question, because now it's right in their face. Like it's right on axis.
Yeah, so I guess it wouldn't matter. It'd just be brightness.
So it wouldn't matter. Yeah, it would be a brightness situation.
Okay.
I mean, it would matter a little bit, but it would not be as critical.
Okay.
So.
Just scratch that. Forget, for anybody who listened to the last part, forget that you listened to it.
That's a teaser for the future. We'll get into all that. I promise. In the meantime, let's talk a little bit about this week's topic already.
Which is over, right? Like, because we just finished the episode.
We just finished the entire episode. No, this week's topic, it's actually such a large topic and such a timely topic. It's large, and so we're going to have to split it into two. It's a two-parter.
Okay.
It's gonna be a two-part special, like when the Dukes of Hazzard used to do the two-parter. And then they'd show up on Dallas or whatever ended up happening.
But I'd always be disappointed in watching the first half because it was a cliffhanger.
Always more with you. Always more. You're just not patient. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, my wireless flash triggers that cost $40 are sitting in Hong Kong. Took two whole weeks to get all the way across the world, said Columbus.
Hey, my problem was that it took 10 days for it to leave Hong Kong, apparently, according to the U.S. Parcel Service.
What do you think Sir Francis Drake would have said if you whined about it taking 2 weeks to get from Hong Kong?
I don't. What would he have said?
I don't know. I don't know. What language did he speak? No. I assume it was English, but it was like all that old Shakespearean British English, I'm assuming, back in the day.
This episode isn't getting shorter with your tangents.
Do you know who Francis Drake is?
It's a guy that's last name starts with a D.
Really? You never heard of that guy?
No.
I'm putting you on the spot. Take a guess.
I have no idea.
First guy to sail around the world.
Not an important piece of history for me.
Turns out Raisinhead wasn't my only nickname in high school. It was also the guy who sits by himself and reads at lunch. There's that guy.
That's all right.
Hey, ladies, let's go talk to Raisin Face. He's reading that book about the Golden Hind.
He knows who Sir Francis Drake is.
Yeah. Maybe he'll tell us that Sir Francis Drake story again. That's awesome.
Moving on.
So this week's topic is fall colors.
Oh, great.
Kind of a favorite. This is like my favorite time of shooting in the year.
Okay.
The end. That's the end of part one.
Tell us more.
Well, you know why you like shooting this time of year, don't you?
Yeah, no, great colors.
What do you like? Great colors. That's the first thing. We're going to shoot leaves, of course.
Yeah, we always have our fall leaf picture. We try to get Sarah, at least, has now been through 4 leaf pictures. This year will be number 5.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, what else? What else do you do? I'll tell you, some of the pictures I look forward to every year from you guys.
Halloween.
Happen. Yeah, but before that.
I don't know. I already said fall leaf picture.
Come on. It's alliteration. I don't want to make you guess. You already dropped the ball on the whole Sir Francis Drake thing. I'll give you a hint. It's a puh-puh sound. Puh-puh.
I don't know.
Pumpkin patch.
Oh, of course. Yeah, pumpkin patch.
Love seeing the pictures from the pumpkin patch. Even though in the pumpkin patch itself, it's kind of muddy and eh. But when you get the picture with the because the kids take the time to choose the pumpkins, right?
Absolutely. Next weekend, actually. We already have it scheduled.
Is it next weekend?
Is when we're going to go to the pumpkin patch, yeah.
Wait, what day is that? What's the date on that?
I don't know.
Oh, man, you don't want to wait till the 16th, huh?
Well, we can always make a return trip. It's open till the end of the month.
Okay.
So but I know 16th. Just because the in-laws are in town and my parents potentially, and so everybody wants to be a part of the pumpkin patch experience. But yeah,
see,
but,
as do I. That's why I'm hinting, because I won't be home until – I won't be home next weekend.
But believe me, home. Sarah and Jack will have no problems with a second trip to the pumpkin patch. So
awesome.
You're sorted.
So are you you're telling me that Sarah will help Emily pick out a pumpkin?
Absolutely.
Okay. Because at 3 months, I don't know how acute Emily's going to be. Acute. Is that even a word? Acute? That's not a word I was even looking for.
It's a word, but I don't think it's in the proper context.
No, it's not. It's early here. I'll be perfectly fair with you. It's really early.
Well, yeah. We've been recording for 45 minutes, so it can't be that early anymore.
Yeah, we started really, really early.
Oh, okay.
And now it's really early. Anyways, so yeah, pumpkin patch. I love the colors. So everyone loves the colors.
Right.
Now, but which colors? Like, what kind of colors come to mind?
Orange and green.
Orange, yeah, orange, well, orange and yellow, and those are the kind of the default ones. But I always find it's sort of that mixed with a bunch of earth tones, like your greens and your browns. Is that what earth tones are? I don't really know.
I don't know. Sounds good.
I always thought earth tones were like, you know, greens and browns.
Okay.
And so I kind of like that mix. And so typically you want to go out and shoot. You know, what's the standard picture? Like, you know, your kids in a pile of leaves or something like that.
Are we talking about the pumpkin patch or are we talking about just fall?
Just fall in general.
Okay. So that's where you confuse me. Pumpkin patch was orange and green. That's what it is.
Good point. Good point. But the leaves are similar. They're kind of that burnt orange sort of.
Yeah, I like the reds and the yellows personally. Yep.
The reds, I'm a big fan of the reds.
Maple leaf, Canadian maple leaf.
Yep. So how do you go about shooting that? Tell me what you look for when you go to shoot your annual leaf picture.
Yeah.
First of all, is it different every year or do you just phone it in?
No, it's been pretty much different every year. So
okay.
Last year was the first time I think I had my leaf picture with the 1.8 lens. So mm-hmm. I had the ability to be a little bit more creative, in which case I think previous years had been just a point and shoot. But first thing is I looked for lots of leaves, of course, and somewhat of a relatively treed background. So trees and leaves.
Uh-huh.
And that's it.
It's important too, I find, especially in those kind of photos with people in them, which are my favorite kind of pictures, is to establish your context, establish your background.
Right.
You know, there's no point in taking a fall picture if it's you're not really taking full advantage of your surroundings. That's what I find. So looking for the treed background and the leaves, great. Where do you go for something like that?
I went to a park last year near where Sarah goes to preschool, so there's lots of trees and lots of leaves there.
Okay. Lots of parks in Vancouver, especially.
Where do you go?
There is one spot in particular here in Tubingen that I really like that we go for a walk. There's a little island in the Neckar River right near the old town. And it's kind of got this long walk of trees. It looks like if I took the picture and told you, oh, I took this in Central Park in New York, you wouldn't dispute it. Like it looks like it could be Central Park.
Yeah.
It isn't. But I like going there. So they have lots of trees and stuff and around that area. But I'll bet you've taken a picture at Minaru Park before.
Yep.
Minaru Pond around there. That's a great spot. You can't go wrong. Anywhere there's a lot of trees and leaves and that. So what are some of the challenges? Do you have any idea?
Last year, my biggest challenge I faced was getting Sarah's, with all the reds and yellows, getting the white balance right on her. So I felt like it was either the leaves were colored properly or she was exposed and white balanced properly, but I had trouble with the balancing the two.
I wish I had an easy solution for you, but I don't. It is very difficult. Like, that's the one thing, especially, again, because I'm colorblind, and so it makes it a little bit more of a challenge to get something good. But because of the changing colors, because the leaves are shifting into like a warmer tone, and especially in the northern hemisphere where we are, and fun fact, we're actually on the same, pretty much the same parallel, you and myself.
Or what about Sir Francis?
Yeah, he's passed on.
Oh.
But yeah, where I am is just slightly north of Vancouver, on which Vancouver is 49th parallel. Now, that's actually relevant to the whole story is because of where the light is and what time the light hits and what the color temperature is.
Right.
And you might notice if you find in the fall and then even more so in the winter that the afternoon and evening light is a lot more blue. It takes on like a real blue tone to it. It can, yeah. Anyways. There are times when it is very, very yellow, but in the evening especially, you get like a real blue tinge to the light.
Okay.
And so that can affect your skin tones as well. So it is very difficult to get the perfect skin tone when shooting in the fall. And I don't have a catch-all solution. It's sort of you have to kind of play it by ear. And I just want you to be aware of that. So, how do you white balance?
I'm not a expert on this matter. So you tell me.
Don't auto white balance. Don't do it, because your camera is pretty smart. Okay, but all it does is it wants to make everything look what it calls normal. So if everything's very, very colored and bright yellow and red leaves, it kind of wants to even that out, and it will shift. It tends to shift the color balance away so that everything, it doesn't really pop out.
Right.
So I tend to establish a benchmark of what I figure the white balance is going to be and then shoot the entire session on that one setting. And now that might be at the daylight setting. And if you shoot the daylight setting, all the leaves are likely to appear. Well, you can shoot the daylight setting and see how that goes. If their skin tones are too blue, then move on and try the the shade setting.
Yeah,
and try something like that and warm it up a little bit. And that might be too warm, so you want to dial it in between and maybe fix it in post.
Okay.
So I wish I had an answer. Like the everything is such a moving target that these things change so rapidly that I would shoot raw. That'd be my best advice, would be to shoot raw and then mess around with it later if you want to get that perfect balance.
Okay.
So What else do you want to talk about shooting fall?
You have any other types of pictures that you like to shoot fall? We talked about pumpkin patch and we talked about all the leaf pictures, but what else that do you like to shoot? You said it's your favorite time of the year.
It's my favorite time. I like shooting people in nature. I don't necessarily like shooting just nature, which I have no problem with. But my favorite is shooting people. But if I'm going to shoot nature shots, I like to shoot close-ups. Because that's one thing that, you know, a lot of people forget when it comes to shooting nature stuff is to get in really tight and maybe shoot a leaf. Yeah. A leaf floating in the river or something like then that's actually a very specific shot that I have made in the past. A leaf floating in water. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And yourself, do you ever go out and shoot just landscape stuff?
Very, very seldom. Yeah.
Busy at craft night.
Yeah. The only time I think that I've shot nature shots or landscape shots are for photo challenges because they don't really appeal to me. It's not something that personally I'm going to more likely put on my wall. So I think the only shot that isn't of family and people in my whole house is the picture that I took way back in one of the earlier challenges of I think there are irises, the flower picture that we did, the vibrant color picture, like way back in an early challenge. That's the only picture in my whole house that is a nature or landscape photo. Everything else is people.
I don't know that I have one on my wall that is a nature. I do have two cityscapes of Vancouver. So other than that.
And I think I would shoot that shot if I was in the right place with cityscape does appeal to me. Mm. But just generally speaking, I'm generally thinking people when I'm shooting.
For me, it was more about, this is a bit of a tangent, but here we go. For me, having the Vancouver cityscape on my wall in Germany was more about sort of, homesickness.
Right.
And when we're in Vancouver, we'll have a picture of Tübingen on the wall. It's a constant homesickness. That's awesome.
Yeah. Never happy with where you are.
Never happy. Always wish we were somewhere else. Yeah. That's the thing is I always refer to – people ask, what's home? Like, what do you call home? And it's kind of funny. Whenever I'm going to somewhere, the place that I'm not, I always say I'm going home.
Yeah.
When I'm in Vancouver, I'm going home to Germany. It's kind of weird like that. Anyways, one more little tip, because that's going to lead us into this. That's like the halfway point.
Okay.
Of fall colors. Did you learn anything first of all
from
fall colors right now?
Just from what you've said.
Hopefully.
I don't know. Maybe.
Whew. Hopefully, the white balance was a takeaway.
Yeah. And I tend to put it on auto white balance. I've been trying to do that less. It's one of the things I've been working on. And again, I do shoot in raw, so I always figure on white balance, I'm just going to end up playing with it. But I have been trying to make a concerted effort to get away from the auto white balance.
Right. It is nice to be able to adjust it later, but I like having a starting point.
Yeah.
Like a really good starting point. And it's not as if you can trust the LCD screen anyways.
Yeah.
In terms of color, and that's a whole nother issue.
Now, here's a white balance question for you. Because now with the flashes, I've been shooting a lot more, trying to use the off-camera flash setup. Maybe, again, getting ahead. But do you just set it to the white balance to the flash setting?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. That can be a big dog's breakfast.
Okay. All right, so. Forget it. Forget I asked.
I'm going to leave that in.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to go into more detail next show, episode 40. We're going to go into more detail about fall colors, because the fall colors aren't here yet. I don't know if are they showing up in Vancouver yet?
Yeah, they're starting to. We did our first, on the weekend, our first gather up a pile of leaves and jump in it on, didn't take any pictures of it, but we did it. And we did a leaf hunt, so there was a leaf hunt.
A leaf hunt.
Yeah, we went around the neighborhood looking for all different colors of leaves, and then we glued them on a piece of paper, part of Daddy's home in the morning Thursdays with the kids.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so we made a leaf picture.
Okay, so it's not starting here in Germany. It looks like summer here is still, but any day now it's going to start happening.
Yeah,
so we're sorted. So the one thing I want to talk about, you know what? I'm just going to hint at it because I want it to be this week's photo challenge.
Okay,
so let's get right into that because there's a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk about next show about like very specific colors and moods and you know what. Basically, what to look for, like what photographs in the fall mean, what the kind of the sort of your mood in the autumn is, like what you think of.
Yeah.
And I want this to represent more, start taking pictures that represent a feeling.
That's for this challenge.
Then that's not for this challenge. That's what we're going to start talking more about. But that's okay. In general, not just in autumn, but that's kind of what my photography. That's what a lot of photography is you're trying to convey a mood about not just about what something looked like or who was at an event, but what it felt like to be there. What you felt when you were there.
Okay.
What it smelled like. I swear to God, I swear I want it to sound like to be like I can imagine what it smells like there.
That's deep.
Not really. Not really. Once you start being it's not every time, but like if you take a picture of somebody, you know, like your daughter at the P&E, you can imagine, oh, it smells like cotton candy or popcorn or something like that.
Okay.
But it doesn't have to always be smells, but it's more about a makes you kind of imagine being in that location or reminded of when you were in somewhere similar. So that's what we're going to talk about next week, a part of it. We're going to talk about more, you know, basic stuff about fall colors. But part of it is creating that feeling.
All right.
But one of the things we're going to talk about next week is what one thing I look for specifically when I'm shooting in the fall. One certain kind of tree.
Hmm. Should I know this?
Well, I wrote it down, but I'm
looking at the show notes. I could actually read it if you want me to. I didn't know if there's some sort of build up here. It says here birch trees.
I love shooting birch trees any time of year, actually. In the winter, it's great because oftentimes you'll be shooting and it'll be kind of dark in the woods, if you're in the woods, and those birch trees will really pop out because they're white.
Yeah. We had birch trees in front of our house as a kid, and I made a painting when I was about 7, and that was the focal point. So I don't even know where that memory came from, but just I agree with you. Birch trees are pretty cool.
This is what I'm talking about photographs, though. I know that was a painting, but this can remind you of that time that you painted the birch trees.
Yeah.
This one's very specific. I'm not saying every photo will be this specific. But for me, we also had a birch tree in our backyard when I was a kid. I remember, you know, all that. But that part aside, just visually, when you're out and shooting in all kinds of bright colors and you want one thing to stick out, oftentimes it's the white trunk of the birch tree.
Yeah.
Now, that's this week's challenge. We'll talk a little bit more about it, if there's much more to talk about birch trees next week. This week's challenge is I want you to somehow photograph a birch tree.
Really?
Now, for everybody out there who's going to participate in the challenge, just shoot a tree. If you can't find a birch tree because of where you live, you know, don't sweat it as if they were sweating it. Oh, man.
I gotta drive 3 hours to find a birch tree.
How long is it to get to Maine? I could just, oh, man, I can't believe my luck. I gotta shoot a birch tree this week. But you can find one, though.
Okay.
I'm going to find one. And I don't care how you do it. I don't care what the picture is. It should incorporate a birch tree.
Okay.
Do you want any more hints? Do you want me to? I'm the one phoning it in, so.
Yeah, I'm gonna probably do a good job.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't you go ahead and do a good job? I'll phone it in again, make you look good, and sort of leveling the playing field.
Yeah.
What we call that. Awesome.
All right.
So between now and part two of the fall colors, where can people find your stuff?
They can find it at schwartzchronicles.com. And yours?
Okay, lead in faster. Do a better lead into mine.
And where can we find yours?
Hey, glad you asked, Adam. As usual, alanetridge.com. You can find Adam and I at twohosers.com, at twohosers on the Twitter. We are on the Flickr site and on iTunes. But just go to twohosers.com and that will sort everything out.
Awesome.
Until next week, get out there. Make better photos.